We begin the current daven stuff, the Ksubas Daf Kof Aleph. We begin 7 lines down from the top of the Yamud, where the Gemara continues the discussion from the previous Daf. That is, we had a Mishnah on the previous Daf that spoke about 3 different types of women that do not get their Ksuba, do not get Blois, do not get Peris, do not get Mezainis. And we spoke about some of the details, and the Gemara in this Daf is going to speak about some of those details too. Now, the first case that the Mishnah spoke about was Hamame Enes, a woman that refuses the marriage. She doesn't get the Ksuba and all the things that come along with that too. Now, however, the Gemara quoted a Machlekes HaMarom on the bottom of the previous daf, if the Girs is Ketana or Meme Enes. Rav held any Ketana that leaves the marriage, whether through Miyun or even through divorce, does not get a Ksuba. Whereas Shmuel said that no, like our Girs and our Mishnah, only if she does Miyun, which uproots it, so therefore it's like she was never married. But a Ketana is considered married, and therefore she gets a Ksuba. Now, that the Gemara says, let's say that the Machlekes Rav Shmuel is actually the same thing as the following Machlekes Tanoi. We learned in the Braisa that Rabbi Elazar Omer, he says, in my Siketana Klum, the actions of a minor in regards to her union with her husband, which is only rabbinic marriage, is really nahalachically considered significant. And therefore, Ve'im Baila Zakai B'mitziyasa, her husband doesn't get her when she finds a lost object like by a regular wife. V'le B'maisi Yedau, her earnings do not go to her husband. V'le B'afars Nederah, neither does the husband have the ability to nullify her vows. Ve'inu Yersha, he doesn't inherit her. Ve'inu Matamala, if he's a Kohen and she dies, he cannot make himself richly impure to her. Kalala Shaldav, Rabbi Elazar says the general rule regarding such a woman is Ein Kesh L'Chaldav, she really is halachically not like his wife in any sense. Ela Shetzicha Miyun, the only difference that she is than just a regular girl that he would just have relations without marriage is that she requires Miyun. And if she wants to end this relationship. But really, it's not really a halachically recognized marriage. Reb Shua, he argues, he says, no, Maisa Ketana Klum, of course, the actions of a minor is something, and therefore it is a real marriage. Ubay Lazaka B'mitziyasa, the husband merits her lost objects that she finds. Ubimaisa Deha, he gets her earnings. Bafars Nadar, Ureha, he can nullify her vows. Viyersha, he can inherit her. Umitamala, he can be Mitamatar. Kol Shadavar, he says, the general rule is Harehi Kesh L'Chaldavar. Really, the marriage of a man to a minor is like a regular marriage. Ela Shayetu B'min, the only difference is like a regular woman can only leave with a get, she could leave with man. Now, Matthew Gemara says, Lema Rav Dama Krab Elazar. Let's say Rav, who he said that, no, she doesn't get a ksuba. Why? Because it's not a real marriage. Well, that sounds like Krab Elazar, who says that Ein Maisa Ketana Klum, and all the different transactions that usually apply to a marriage don't apply. Ushmul Dama Krab Yeshua. Whereas Shmuel, who says, of course she gets a ksuba, sounds like Rabbi Yeshua, who says, of course, it's like a regular marriage. The only difference is that she could leave with me. So on that, the Gemara says, no, not necessarily the case. And that is, Aliba de Rabbi Elazar kul amalei plig. You're right. According to Rabbi Elazar, that nobody argues, in other words, this that you said that Shmuel sounds like Rabbi Yeshua and not like Rabbi Elazar, that you're correct. Shmuel has to agree that according to Rabbi Elazar, that there wouldn't be any ksuba for the katana. The reason being is because if regarding the husband's ability to inherit her or get her lost objects that she finds, where those are things that go from her to him, meaning things that the husband merit, still Rabbi Elazar is saying that the rabbis did not institute that he gets these things. For sure the rabbis did not institute that the woman should get the ksuba which goes from him to her. The reason being, as Rashi explains, is because the whole concept, the rabbinic enactment of creating marriage for a minor orphan through her mother or her brothers, was made for the benefit of the girl, as the Gemara explains in Sechas Yevamos, so that people shouldn't treat her in a disrespectful way because there's no one really taking care of her. And she doesn't know how to watch over herself and she doesn't have a father. So if Rabbi Elazar is not awarding the husband, who's really gaining, who we're trying to help to award to the other one, is the girl. So we should give incentives for the husband, and we don't give him these incentives. So for sure, we're not going to give her incentives, giving her a ksuba, because the whole point is to help her. So according to Rabbi Elazar, you're right, everyone would agree that Shmuel cannot be like Rabbi Elazar. But ki pligi alibi Rabbi Yeshua. But however, this that you said that Rav is like Rabbi Elazar and not like Rabbi Yeshua is not true. Because actually, the Machlokes Rav Shmuel could even be in the Tanog opinion of Rabbi Yeshua. And that is Shmuel could be Yeshua. Shmuel, we understand very well why he is how he holds according to Rabbi Yeshua's opinion. Because according to Rabbi Yeshua, it seems like he equates a minor like a regular married woman. So that's why Shmuel would hold that a katana that gets divorced with a get, of course, gets a ksuba. But for Rav, Rav would tell you, no. Ad kan lekam Rabbi Yeshua Hasam. Where do we find Rabbi Yeshua in that brayso that we just quoted that says that the actions of a minor are kayim? That meaning that it's a halachically recognized marriage. That's that's only things that are going from her to him. For example, his ability to inherit her, to get her the found objects that she has. That all these things are going from her to him. The reason being is because we want to give incentives. We don't want men to say, I don't want to marry her. And we want men to marry the girls because there's no one really taking care of them. So that's why Yeshua says it's a recognized marriage, that all those things go to him. But from him to her, for example, Aksuba and all the conditions of Aksuba, that lie. No, that Rabbi Yeshua would agree that the woman doesn't get it. Because we're doing you a favor. We're trying to get men to marry you so that people shouldn't treat you disrespectfully in the way of Hefker. And therefore Rav says that I could even hold my opinion even in Rabbi Yeshua. That is, even he would agree, the way he's Giris is now Mishnah, that a minor never gets Aksuba even when she's divorced. Because, again, those are not things that we made Maisa Ketana Klum. It's only from her to him, not from him to her. Now, the Gemara continues that, in speaking about these three women who we said they don't get their ksuba, and when they don't get pears, they don't get mezainas, so it also mentioned veloy belois. They don't get their worn-out garments. Now, on that, the Gemara qualifies this, and in a sense, in the way of a chiddush, what would not be understood in the regular reading of the Mishnah. Amalei Rav Huna bar Chila Rav Kahana. He said that Amrit Lo Mishmeid Shmuel, you told us in the name of Shmuel, that Lo Yishanu, we didn't learn this halacha of our Mishnah, that when these women leave the marriage, whether through Miyun, or because she's an illness, or because she's a secondary erva, that she doesn't get her worn out garments that she brought into the marriage, which the husband was wearing, that's Ella Nichsi Miluk. It's only items which are really, that she owns herself, that she didn't bring into the ksuba, which means it gets assessed and evaluated, gets put into the document of the ksuba, which the husband owes to her. Rather, she keeps it in her own possession. So the keren, the principle, always belongs to her. And the peris, the produce, the utility of it, that gets used by the husband. That's one of the takanas rabbanan that he gets to use that. So regarding the belois, the worn-out garments of her nechsi milog, that is what we said she doesn't take when she leaves. Ava nechsi tzarim barzel, but regarding the properties of what's called tzarim barzel, the reason why it's called tzarim barzel, which literally translates as iron sheep, it's saying sheep, meaning possessions that she brings in, which are hard and they last like iron, because the husband accepts responsibility for whatever will happen to them. So, however, regarding nichsid sarim barzel, which they get evaluated in the ksuba, because that's actually what he writes in the ksuba, v'don nedunya tahanalis lamabesavua, that this are the properties that she brought in from her father's house, and he accepts responsibility to return it exactly as it was brought in when they got married. So, however, regarding those worn out garments, isla. That you said in the name of Shmuel, that the blois of the Nechsi Tzarim Basel, these women get when they leave. Now that the Gemara asked, Havi Bar Rav Papa. So Rav Papa asked regarding this qualification, defining the halacha of our Mishnah, that she doesn't get the blois. Again, which blois? Only the blois of Nechsi Melug she doesn't get. But the blois of Nechsi Tzarim Basel she does get. So on that, Rav Papa wondered, Aheya. Regarding which one of these three women are you qualifying this as such? As the Gemara explains, if you were talking about, let's take the first case of Ma'enes. If you were qualifying the halacha in a woman that's a minor that refuses the marriage, but let's look at it. If these blois, these worn-out garments, are still extant, they're here, they were worn for many years, they were married, and now she's refusing the marriage, she's 11 years old, she wants to leave. If they're still around, but that's problematic, then she should be able to take not only what you're saying, the nichsi tzarim barzel, but also the nechsi milug, because there's no reason for us to penalize her. It's her garments she brought into the marriage. She's leaving, she's doing miyun, and she should be able to take it. So why would you say it's only by nechsi tzarim barzel and not nechsi milug? And ve'ida lesnehu, and if they're not around, then idi ve'idi, then both nechsi milug and nechsi tzarim barzel, loy shakla, she shouldn't be able to take. As Rashi explains, the husband could say that when I utilize these nichsei tzarim barzel, I was using my own things, because that's actually one of the permissions of the courts, that when a man marries a woman, he gets to use the nichsei tzarim barzel, and I'll give you back what it was worth when it came into the marriage, but it's like almost like mine for the marriage. Now, however, but the husband says, it's only but when I divorce her with a get, then I give her back, whether I accepted the responsibility in the ksuba, but not in the situation of miyun, that I never accept the responsibility. So if it's not around anymore, so for example, let's say the nechse in Basel, that he shouldn't have to give back. And so too by the nechse milug, that even though nechse milug is actually something which the husband has no rights to use the nechse milug themselves, he gets to pay us, but not the nechse milug themselves. However, even in such a case, let's say he wore it out and now the guf itself, the principal is not here anymore, which he should be liable for, he could say, I don't have to give it back until I divorce her. Because that's the halacha, not in this case when it's through me. And the reason being is why? What do you mean? You didn't have any rights to use it. Because he can claim, maybe she's going to die first. And then, halachically, I'm going to inherit her. So I didn't give a get. So maybe the nechse milug, although I used it inappropriately, but could be I ended up using my own. Now you're doing miyun? Fine, you could leave. But that doesn't mandate me to give you the nechse milug, because maybe I would have gotten it. So on that, the Gemara asks, how could the qualification of the Shmuel be on the Mema'enis? It can't be. Because there, either way you look at it, you can't say only that the nechse tzar in Basel she gets and nechse milug not, those worn out garments, because either way you look at it, if they're extant, she should get both. If they're not, she shouldn't get either one of them. So elal alness. So what are you going to say? That he was qualifying in the case of alness, which is a woman that never fully developed all the characteristics of a regular woman. On that, the Gemara asks, id is nehu, if they're still extant, if they're around, well, id v'id shakl, then she should take both. And the reason being is because when he divorces her, when he sends out the alness, it's because he doesn't want to be married to an alness. So fine, there's no reason to penalize her, it's her items, she could take her stuff and leave. So why would she not be able to take back home with her her blois of nechse milug? And either less nehu, if they're not around anymore, now, and so what are you going to say? So you would say that, meaning they're not around because they got used up in the time they were married. But you could say that he never knew the woman that he was marrying was going to be an alness. So then you would say, so he should be exempt because I used it like a regular wife. Now I find that you're an alness, we're not married, he's a mekach toyes. But if that's the case, the Gemara asks, if you're coming to differentiate between nechse tzar in Basel and nechse milug, and you want to exempt him because, you know, it got used up, fine, it's not my fault, I thought you were a regular woman, you're not, but now it's a mekach toyes, now you leave, ipcha mi bayle. Then it shouldn't, actually the division that we're quoting in Mishmul should have been the other way around. Nechse milug dibrishus akaimi. Regarding her nechse milug, which are properties that really she keeps to herself. So those are things that are really hers. Hence, he should never have warned them and warned them out that they're not around anymore. So therefore, isla. So therefore, he should have to pay her back even though they're not around. In other words, as the Gemara will later explain, obviously in this interpretation of Rapapa, that meaning that he obviously holds that the wearing of the garment itself is the principle. It's not considered the utility. It's not the payers of it. The wearing, and thus the wearing out of the garment, is actually considered the Karen. So the Karen of the nechse milug was always hers. So now that she's leaving, and there's no reason to penalize her as an ailness, so he just doesn't want to stay married to her because the mekach toyes, so but at least that he should have to give her back. And however, nechse tzar in Basel, but the other way around is that those garments, which he accepted responsibility on them, which he was allowed to use them because that's almost like his during the marriage, where the lav b'rishus hakayim, where that obviously are items which are not in the possession of her, it's rather in the husband's possession. So lesla, that she shouldn't get. So how can you say that Shmuel says that the woman leaving this marriage will not get her blois? It's told about nechse milug, but nechse tzar in Basel she will get. If you're told about an island, it should be the other way around. Her nechse tzar in Basel, which is in the possession of the husband, she shouldn't get. And nechse milug, which the husband should never have used, she should get. And again, if they're both around, she should get both. So the Gemara concludes it's on the third of them. Ella Ashnia. Rather, it's Toma in reference to a secondary erva, which they married in sin, which the reason why she doesn't get blois when she leaves is because of a penalty, because we don't want people to be married in sin. Now, what we're talking about is that they're not extant anymore. Now, on that, the Gemara explains, V'konsu Rabbanan, the rabbis penalized. In other words, truthfully is that it should have been the other way around, the way we just explained with an alness. When she's leaving, which we don't let them stay married, she should be taking home her nechse milug, meaning those that were even used up because he had no right to use them, and then nechse tzar in Basel, which he had rights, should be kept by him. But the rabbis did the exact opposite thing when they're uprooting this forbidden marriage that was made in sin. and the rabbis penalize Lidida, they penalize her Bididei with what was fit for her to collect from him. What are things that she rightfully should get from him? They're the primary ksuba of a man or mesayim. They're her sustenance. They're worn out garments of nichse melug, which every woman should take home because it's really hers and he has no right to wear them. Where those are things which now actually, since those are things that she had rights to, and where you married in sin, we're going to penalize the things that you're supposed to get, you're not going to get. That's why the Mishnah is saying, and the way Shmuel's qualifying is that the balois of the nichse melug, she doesn't get to take. And moreover, the other way around too. Ulididei, we penalize him, what was coming to him in the regular marriage, bidida, what would have been coming from her to him. In other words, the blois of the nichse term basel, which he used rightfully so, that we say that actually now you have to give that to her. So it's actually interesting, it comes out paradoxically the opposite of what normally would be, because that's what we're going to knas. You're going to get that, now you're not getting that. Now she's going to get that. You're going to get that, now he gets that. Again, that's because of the element of knas that applies to this case of when a man marries a shnia, a rabbinically forbidden woman that's an erva midrabon. Now, on this, parenthetically, the Gemara comments, Amar Rav Shimi Bar Ashi says, Shema mino midrav Kahana. We can infer from this statement of Rav Kahana, who what we just quoted before, that he says that a secondary erva does not get her blois of nichse milug. He said this in the name of Shmuel. He said that, again, paradoxically so, but we said that although a woman generally gets her blois of nichse milug, in this case, no, she's going to get the blois of nichse term barzel, because we're penalizing him, which he normally would get, and now she's getting it. And by the blois of nichse milug, she's not getting. Now, that is as we just explained. That's because the rabbis are penalizing her in what which should normally become from him to her. But the inference, the understanding is, but a regular woman, when she's leaving the marriage, she could collect her nichse, her blois of her nichse milug from the husband, even if they're not extant. So on that, you could infer that if Ailele Glima, if a woman brought a garment into the marriage which was of nichse milug, which was not evaluated in the dowry which is written into the ksuba, which would be like nichse term basel, that must be karnahava. That is, that the garment itself is principal. In other words, that the garment is the woman's to be able to sell. Now, then with that garment that she sells, then you purchase land with that, and then he eats the payrus of that land, because we want that nichse milug to remain hers. In other words, what we're trying to say is that, but we don't say that, no, he can wear the garments and the wearing is the payrus, is the utility of it. No, we want her to be able to remain with her nichse milug. So good, so she takes the glima and she sells it and then she gets karka and then he eats those payrus, but that means the principle never gets worn out, never gets lost. And hence what that means is, v'lo michse lava azla debali. He cannot take the garment and say, look, of course the principle is yours, but I'm using it, the payrus is utility, and I'm going to wear it. No, because it's going to get worn out, it's going to get lost. And we see that by a garment, by the nichse milug, that the wearing is not payrus, the wearing itself would be considered the karen itself, which she has no rights to. And again, that's why we said that it's only in the case of the shnia, where then she loses that, because we're penalizing her. But a regular woman would get the blois of the nichse milug. Moreover, is that he actually would have no right to use the nichse milug. Now, that the Gemara asks on this inference from Rav Kahana in the name of Shmuel, the Gemara asks, but V'amar Rav Nachman says in Per Ki'isha Naf Ayin Tesim Abeis, that Peirahava, he says that the wearing of the garment is the utility which the husband has the rights in the payrus of the nichse milug. Well, that the Gemara answers, Rav Nachman Pliga. Obviously, Rav Nachman argues, and this is what they argue about, what's the halacha in the wearing of the garment? Is that considered the keren itself, which he has no rights to? Or is it considered the payrus which the husband has rights to? Now the Gemara continues is explaining our Mishnah that said, Ein lan ksuba. So we spoke about these three women, the Islandess, the Shnia, and the Mema'enis, that they don't get a ksuba when they leave the union. Now, on that, the Gemara qualifies this and says, Amar Shmuel. Shmuel says, Lo yishana elamana masayim. We only said that they don't get the primary ksuba, which every single woman gets if she's an amana, if she's a besula, masayim. But Shmuel says, but the additional parts that he adds on, that he wants to add onto the ksuba, that she gets because that's just a gift that he's just putting in because of the endearment of the intimacy that they have. And therefore, that has nothing to do with the fact of, let's say, it's a mekach toys of an islandess or a memeendess uprooting the marriage. Has nothing to do with that. It's a gift that he gave her because of the intimacy that they're going to have. And therefore, she gets it. Tanya Maracha, similar in the Braisa. Noshim Sha'amur Chachamim. Regarding the women that the sages used the terminology of Ein Lehen Kesuba, that they don't have a Kesuba, Kagain, for example, like the case of our Mishnah, of Hamama Enes, of a woman that refuses the marriage, of a Chabersel, all the other types, for example, of Dishnia, Ein Lehen Mon Messiah. They just don't get the primary Kesuba. Of the Sefer Yeshlen, but of course the additional parts they get. However, that stands in contrast to Noshim Sha'amur Chacham regarding women that the sages used a terminology of Yoytzai Shaloi B'Ksuba, they leave without a Ksuba. That's different than saying that they don't have a Ksuba. It's Yoytzai Shaloi B'Ksuba, where that means to say that they go out with nothing. So regarding them, for example, Kugurin Averest Aldas, for example, if a woman that violates Jewish law, as the Gemara explained enough, Ayin Beisim and Aleph, or regarding the case of Vachavirsel, or the other types of women, for example, if let's say he marries her and he finds out that she has Nidarm that she took on herself, or she has certain blemishes, or if she curses his parents in front of his children. So then, Einlan Toisevus, there they don't get the Toisevus, and because Kamanu Masayim, and for sure they don't get the primary Ksuba. Now, the Braisa continues, it says, Vahayotzi Mishum Shemra, if a woman leaves the marriage because of a bad name that she has, that she had an adulterous affair with another man as a married woman, then they tell us Mashallah for now, then she just takes what's in front of her, in other words, her remaining Nixemilug, but Vahayotzi, and she leaves without a Ksuba. Now, in that, the Gemara says, Misayeh L'Rav Huna, that supports actually what Rav Huna had said. Because the Amr Rav Huna, said Zinza, if a woman was Mezana, then Lohiv Sida, she doesn't lose out as her Ketan Tamad Beis, but Lohiv Seh Kayaman, that is her worn out garments of the Nisim Lug, which are still extant, she doesn't lose that. That she could take and leave, but of course she doesn't get Iksuba. Now, however, actually, Tani Tani Kamid Rav Nachman, there was a teacher of Bryce's that taught him in front of Rav Nachman, that taught him Zinza, if a woman is Mezana, she has an extramarital affair, then Hifsida Bloisea Kayaman, then she actually does lose her garments that are worn out, that's still there. So Amalesa, on that Rav Nachman told him, Imhi Zinse, if the woman was Mizana, Kilel Mizanoi, he said in the way of like, what do you think, her clothing wore Mizana? No. Tanei actually teach the Braisa, Loi Hifsida Bloisea Kayaman, she does not lose, as we taught in the previous Braisa, she does not lose her worn out garments that she could take when she leaves the marriage. Now, Amar Rabba B'chana Amar B'yechana, he explains, he says, actually, this anonymous Brisa that the teacher of Brisa is taught in front of Rav Nachman, that the woman does lose B'loi Seh Kayamin, is actually Divi Rabbi Nachem Estimta. It's actually the opinion of Rabbi Nachem, who he's known as the anonymous one. The reason is because many of his teachings are taught in the Mishnah, and Brisa anonymously doesn't say his name. So he actually is the one that holds that she does lose her worn-out garments that are her Nixim Elug when she leaves. But the sages say, Zinsa, if she was Mizana, as the previous Braisa, she does not lose her worn-out garments when she's leaving the marriage. Now, the Mishnah qualified and said, regarding one of these three women, which is the islandess, though it said she doesn't get a ksuba, but it said, if when he initially married her, he knew she was an islandess, so obviously it's not a mekachtoi, it's not a mistaken acquisition, so then, of course, when he divorces the islandess, she gets a ksuba. Now, Amar Rav Huna, related to this, Rav Huna said as follows. He said, Islandess, a woman that did not fully mature as regular women, Isha ve'ina Isha. In other words, sometimes she's like his wife, and sometimes she's not like his wife. Almana, when a widow gets married to a Kohen Gadol, she's an Isha Gemur. She's always judged as a full-fledged wife. As the Gemara explains, Islandess, Isha ve'ina Isha, an Islandess is sometimes considered like his wife and sometimes not, means Hikerba, if he recognized, he knew she was an islandess getting married, so then she's like a regular woman, yesh l'ksuba, as we just explained. Loi Hikerba, if he didn't recognize that she was an islandess and only later found out, so then ain't l'ksuba, she doesn't get l'ksuba, she's not like a wife. However, almana isha gemura, a widow to a kohen gadol, is always considered like a full-fledged wife, and that is bein Hikerba. Bein loi Hikerba, whether he knew she was a widow going in or not, yesh l'ksuba, she gets l'ksuba when she leaves the marriage. Whereas Rabbi Huda Aimer, he argues in this, he says, no. Achazu ve'achazu, whether it's an alnus or whether it's a malukah and gadol, isha ve'ena isha. Either one of them is sometimes like a wife and sometimes not like a wife. Because hikarba, yesh l'ksuba, if he recognizes that she's an alnus or a widow, then she gets a ksuba, because he went in knowing that. La hikarba, ain't l'ksuba. But if he didn't recognize, in other words, even in the case of Amanda Lakan God, if he didn't know that, and he only found out later, then she does not get a ksuba. He argues under Funa. Now the Gemara says Mesa, but the Gemara asks from the following Brisa on Rav Huna. The Brisa says, Kenasa Bacheska Shehig Kain. If let's say somebody got married, a Kongola got married to a widow, knowing that going in, she notified him and said, I'm a widow. He said, no, I don't care. Venimsa Shekin, it turns out she actually is a widow. So then Yeshla Ksuba, although it's their married in sin, but it's a halachically valid kedushin, so she gets a ksuba. Now that the Gemara asked, the inference is Hastama. But if let's say that no one said anything, which is essentially the same case as Lohikra, but he didn't know going in that she's a widow. Sounds like Ein Laksuba, that she wouldn't get a ksuba. It's only if he knew that going in. So that seems to be a refutation of Huna, who said that Amalek and Gadol bein Hikarba lebein Lohikarba, she'll get a ksuba. So the Gemara says, no. Light Tema don't make the inferential statement Hastama Ein Laksuba, but that if nothing was said, then she doesn't get a ksuba. Le'ima rather say that the inferential statement of the Bryce is coming to tell us that Kenasa Becheska She'ena Ken. If let's say he married her with the understanding that she's not a widow, in other words, she fooled him. She said, he asked her point blank. And she says, no, I was never married to anyone beforehand. Then Nimsa She'ken, and then later it turns out that she actually was a widow, then Ein Lo Ksuba. Then, of course, that's a Mekach Tais, and then she doesn't get a ksuba. So that the Gemara asks. So Avostama Mai, but what are you saying? Let's say he didn't make any prenuptial conditions that she's not a widow. But he didn't know either way. Nothing was said. So then you want to say, Rav Huna, that Isla, that she would get a ksuba. But that the question is, then Adetoni, instead of the Brisa saying that if he married her, Becheska Shekain, with the understanding that she's a widow, Benimtsa Shekain, it turns out that she is a widow, that Yeshla Ksuba, that she gets a ksuba, you should have said a bigger chiddush. Lishmin and Stama, the Koshkin heart, should have said, even if he didn't know going in, even Stama. And then he finds out that she's a widow, even then your opinion holds that she gets a ksuba, and for sure when he knew going in. So according to you, it should have said a bigger chiddush. Void more of the Gemara asks on Rav Huna. Tane, we learned explicitly in the Brisa that says, Kenasa b'yidua, if he married her knowing that she's a widow, b'nimtzis b'yidua, it turns out that she is a widow, then yesh l'ksuba. But the Brisa says, Kenasa stam, if he marries her plain, ain l'ksuba, it says clearly that she doesn't get a ksuba. So Gemara concludes, so you have to Rav Huna, obviously that's a refutation of Rav Huna, rather that halacha is like Rav Yehuda, that just like we said regarding an island, it's also regarding a Malach HaGadol, if he didn't know, then it's not like Ke'ishta and she doesn't get a ksuba. Now the Gemara explains that Rav Huna must need not to yase. What misled Rav Huna was actually the wording of our Mishnah. Who suffer? He thought, midikom maflik ba'ailanis, from the fact that our Mishnah differentiates in the halacha of an ailanis. That although an ailanis is one of those women that don't get iksuba, it said, however, if initially when he married her, he knew that she was an ailanis, that she gets iksuba, v'loikom maflik ba'almano, but our Mishnah does not make that differentiation regarding an almano. So Rav Huna thought to say, machlal, the almana afilibastamana misla. Must be that almana, there is no difference. And just like the Mishnah says, almana gets iksuba, is even if he didn't know going in. That the Gemara says, v'lohi, that's not the case. Because actually, kikotoni lo la'almana, when the Tana of our Mishnah taught the halacha of almana that says that she gets iksuba, aplukta de alnas kai. If you look at the sequence of our Mishnah, right after it makes the differentiation in the islandess, whether if he knew that she was an alnis, then she gets a ksuba. And if he didn't know that she doesn't, right after that in the Mishnah is taught the halacha of an almana getting married to Kohen Gadol, to tell you that the almana is the same thing. If he knew that she's an almana and he got married for the intention of marrying an almana, that's what the Mishnah means to say, that then she gets a ksuba. But however, if he didn't know going in, then it's actually the same thing as an alnis, that she does not get a ksuba. Hadnu lach almana nizaynis, we shall return to you the 11th parak of Masechta Ksubas, Perek Amon Nezaynus, and with that we begin the 12th Perek of Masechta Ksubas, Perek Hanoyseh Se'isha. The Mishnah begins, Hanoyseh Se'isha. If someone marries a woman, and he made some prenuptial agreements regarding the marriage, she made up with him, Kedesha Yasin Esbita, that he will provide sustenance for her daughter, meaning that she had from a different marriage, she's coming in with a daughter, as long as he agrees to feed her Chameshan for a period of 5 years. So the halacha is Chayv L'Zayin L'Chameshan. So if he made that agreement, so then he has to feed her for 5 years. Now, what happens if Nisus, the mother then, after the first husband divorces her, then she gets remarried La'achar to another man? Upaski Imay, and again she does the same thing. She makes a condition with him, Kadesh Yazn Esbita Chameshan, as long as he feeds her daughter for 5 years. So Chayv L'Zayin L'Chameshan. So Yos has to feed her daughter for 5 years. Now, moreover, the Mishnah explains, Lo yema harishon. The first husband can't say, look, l'kashatovei etz liyazayna. When she comes to me, I'll feed her. In other words, if I would still be married to the mother, then I would feed her. But now that I'm not married to her and she's getting married to someone else, I'm not feeding her daughter for 5 years. And that the Mishnah says he can't do that. But he already made up, he's going to feed her for 5 years, whether the marriage lasts or not. Rather, he goes and sends the sustenance that he promised for 5 years to where her mother is, where it's maybe with the next husband. Now, moreover, neither can both of them make up together, saying there's the first husband and the second husband. Look, you wanted your daughter fed for 5 years. We'll feed her together. He'll give 50% and I'll give 50%. No. Each one promised to feed her for 5 years. So rather, ela echad zana, one gives her the sustenance, ve'echanos l'temeimazan, another one gives money of 5 years worth of sustenance. Now, the story continues. If let's say nisus, let's say the daughter herself gets married to a man now. So habal nois l'mazayin, her husband, as any husband has to, feeds his wife. So what are the other two men now doing? Ve'he nois l'temeimazan, now her stepfathers, they give, each one has to give 5 years worth of money for sustenance, because she's already getting sustenance from her own husband. Now, actually, interestingly, the Mishnah says, Mesui, when these stepfathers die, their own daughters actually only could get sustenance from available assets in the estate, meaning, and not from the chasim mishabadim, which are in other people's properties that were sold off, or in other people that have from his land that was sold after he had already had these daughters. And the reason being is because the Mishnah teaches in Gittin Daf Mem Chesam Beis that a person cannot collect for the what's called Chilas Peris, Shvach Karkois, and for the sustenance of women and of daughters from the Chasam Mishabadim. So his own daughters cannot collect from the Chasam Mishabadim, only from the Chasam Necharin. And interestingly is that Vehi, this daughter who came along with her mother to all these new marriages, she is Nizainis from the Chasam Mishabadim. She can get fed from even encumbered properties. The reason being is because Bnei Shehi Kabbalah Schaiv. She's like a creditor because she has what's called a Shtar Mezayin, a document of 5 years worth of sustenance that you promised me. So she has the first debt, and when other people come afterwards and buy those properties were encumbered to her, and therefore she could go ahead and actually collect it from as a Baal Schaiv from the Chasam Mishabadim. Now the Mishnah concludes that Hapikram HaYikaisim, so the smart men, they would write. They didn't want the situation. Maybe they're going to get divorced in a half a year and they have to support that woman's daughter for the next 5 years. So they would write, Amanas she'ozn es bitcha chameshanim. You write, we'll get married on the condition that I feed your daughter 5 years. Kalzman sha'atimi. As long as you're with me. Now, with me means that I'm not dead, you're not dead, and that I didn't divorce you. And that takes care of these problems about having to feed her daughter for 5 years when the marriage didn't last that amount of time. Now, related to the topic of our Mishnah, the Gemara brings the following machlokes amiram. Itma, we learned, ha'im l'chaveri. If someone tells his friend, chayv ani l'cha mana, I owe you a mana. So, Rabbi Yechonah amar chayv, he says that the person now is liable. Shlokesh amapot, he says, no, he's exempt. So the Gemara wonders, heichad amir, what's the case talking about? Ida amar lahu, if the person who's claiming he owes this other guy money tells everybody listening, Atim Edai, you're all my witnesses that I admit to him that I owe him this money. So then my time is Shlokesh, the Kapata. Then what would be the reason of Rish Lakish who says the person exempt when we learned in the Mishnah Masechet Sanhedrin of Chav Tesem and Af that says, in a different context, that says, until he admits that he says that he admitted in front of other people. In other words, what we see from that Gemara is that if a person admits in front of witnesses and says, yes, I owe this person money, that he is liable, so why would Rish Lakish say that he's exempt? And Ida Loya Amar Lohu, and if he didn't tell the oldest people listening around that Atam Edi, you're my witnesses, so then my time to Rabbi Yechonah Kemachayv, then what would be the reason of Rabbi Yechonah who says that the person is liable? Because as the Gemara in Sanhedrin there says that for a person to be liable for his admission, it has to be that he told people, you're my witnesses. And if he didn't say, he's exempt. So what's the understanding of this machlokes? So that the Gemara says, L'oilam D'loy Kamar Lohu Atam Edi. Right, the truth is talking about that he didn't tell everybody listening that you're my witnesses. But v'hachamayiskin, what we're talking about over here is a specific case. The amalei that he told him, how did he tell them this? He said to him, chayv ani l'cha mana. He says, I owe you this mana. He told this to him bishtar, in the document. In other words, he gave this person a document that in the document this person had written, I owe you a mana. Now, as Rashi explains, although it's his own handwriting, since he never signed his name, he's actually exempt. Now Rashi points out one thing that although we learned in the Mishnah of Chafalf Medalf that if someone would produce a document with someone else's handwriting that he owes him money, he could collect from the Chasam B'nei Charin, although not Machasam HaShabadim. That Rashi explains is only talking with the person signed. He wrote, me, this, and such person, I borrowed a money from this person. And Abai explains over there that you should write it on a shard if they just want your signatures to be verified in the courts. But if you write on a scroll, that's problematic because someone might find it. And the lahalocha that we learned, which we just quoted from the Mishnah Daf Chafalaf Manalv, is told about if the person signs. But here what we're talking about over here is where he wrote, I owe you a mana, and he didn't sign on it. So therefore, generally, actually, the person would still be exempt. But Rabbi Yechonah Mechayv, he says the person is chayv. Why is that? Because alima milsa deshtara. There is relevance to the significance of a document, as Rashi specifies, since this document was given over in front of Edom. Witnesses saw him giving this document, which says, I owe you money, even though he didn't sign, but it was given over in front of witnesses, so it's command de amar lahu atem edim dami. It's writing, in a sense, is like saying, so it's like telling the witnesses, since you're doing it in front of witnesses, as if you're telling them, you're my witnesses, that I am telling him that I owe him money. And therefore, Rabbi Yechonah says, just like when you tell witnesses, you're my witness that I owe money, same thing is here when you give a document, even though you didn't sign, but you did it in front of witnesses, as if you're saying atem edem. Shlakish amapat. He says no. He says loy alima milsa d'shtar. He says no, that there is no significance to the giving over a document if you never told the witnesses around that you're my witnesses, and therefore he says you're going to be exempt. And then the Gemara in the coming daf will quote from our Mishnah that seems to be problematic in this halacha of Rishlakish from our Mishnah.